ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Going to read this one from some verses from Canto 6, chapters 1 and 2. These verses that I'm going to be reading from, they're directly expressing the theology of being. Generic story that I shared yesterday. The disciple that wanted to receive from his spiritual master the most confidential thing. Remember that story? And when he received it, he was feeling very fortunate, but he didn't know the glories of that most confidential thing. So when he saw the fishermen, the washermen, and the children also chanting the holy name, which was the most confidential thing, he felt cheated. How is this the most confidential thing? And his spiritual master showed him, it's the holy name, but also understanding that which the holy name is the most confidential thing, and that has to be received in a descending fashion. To parallel that same understanding, the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita begins, Raja Vijaya Raja Guyam, the most confidential, the king of knowledge. The most confidential knowledge, that's the title of the chapter, Rajaguyam. Pavitram idam uttamam pratyakshav abhagamam dharmyam susukam kart. So there's glories of pure devotional service. But then those glories are not going to be understood. Even they're expressed, they still remain confidential unless one has faith. So, the topic that is on the schedule is this morning and then later this morning, the topic is increasing the quality and the quantity of our chanting, and I thought to speak about doing so on the strength of faith, nurturing faith in the holy name. And one of the ways to nurture faith in the holy name is to understand the glories of the holy name, exactly what it is. The holy name is so glorious that even you don't know what it is, it's powerful. And this sixth canto, first few chapters, is detailing how Abbas chanting, Nam Abbas, is so glorious. It saved the life of Ajamil. And so, what to speak of if one knows the glories? So the most confidential part is understanding Krishna. Not just getting saved from reactions of sins. Like in the example of Haridas Thakur, when he was at the assembly of Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar, the father and the uncle of Ramananda Roy, Raghunath Das Goswami. He was visiting
And the priest, Balaramacharya, he knew of the glories of Haridas Thakur, and so he requested the Majumdars to arrange an assembly where they could discuss the glories of the holy name. And when the learned brahmanas were presenting the glories of the holy name, they explained the holy name, if chanted, can eliminate all sinful reactions. And another said, more than sinful reactions, when it can enter into the realm of liberation. And Haridas was saying, no. That's not the glories of the holy name. That's the reflection of the holy name. Abbas. So if we can understand, to increase the quality of our chanting, the Srimad Bhagavatam provides us with an understanding, and our acharyas in their commentaries further expand that understanding about the glories of the holy name. To improve the quality of our chanting, to move from mechanical chanting to a more deep type of chanting, if we can appreciate what chanting is, that will nurture that deepening of our chanting qualitatively and quantitatively. Quantitative chanting is also very nice, and it's very important. And it's one of the reasons why, kind of like a centerpiece of this festival of the Holy Name is the 32-round day. So this is like a warm-up for the 32-round day, because that's quantitative. Quantitative chanting helps qualitative chanting. In Harinam Chintamani, written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, spoken by Haridas Thakur, in describing the offenses against the chanting of the holy name, how to protect oneself from the offenses against the chanting of the holy name, or if one has inadvertently committed one of those offenses against the holy name, what's the antidote? What's the medicine? So each of the examples that are given of the 10 offenses, there's something that's the opposite of it. Like, if one has offended a Vaishnava, one should go and make full, beg forgiveness from that Vaishnava who one has offended, and very carefully guard against offending a Vaishnava. But then the example is given, supposing that Vaishnava, for whatever the reason, isn't forgiving, what do you do then? And the answer is, after some time you go back again and plead again. And what do you do if after the second time they're still not forgiving? After some time you go back and plead again. And again. And if still they're not forgiving, Haridas Thakur says, then continuously chant the holy name. So there's the putting something on the other side of the pan scale, and constant chanting of the holy name. So increasing qualitative chanting assists in overcoming the offenses against the holy name, to move from Nam Abbas to Shuddha Nam. Chanting. Trying to overcome the offenses is enhanced by increasing chanting. As long as one, in the course of that chanting, is not continuing to make those offenses, thinking it's okay, I'm chanting. I'm neutralizing those offenses because I'm chanting, and then that becomes, that's offense. It's not nam abhas, it's nam aparat. To make offense deliberately or knowingly that it's okay, thinking it's okay, because I'm a chanter of Hare Krishna. I've got a license to make offenses. So this is nurturing faith in the glories of the holy name session to enhance the quality and quantity of our chanting. So a very nice entry point into that subject is how Vyasadeva, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam, chooses to do that. In the beginning of the sixth canto, there's a discussion about the theology of freeing one from sins. Every theology has something that says about that, because people in this material world, they make mistakes. Where it's a place for making mistakes. It's, you know, the spiritual world was without mistakes, but here are persons that intentionally or unintentionally make mistakes. They go against the will of God, and there's responsibility for going against the will of God. There's reactions for that. There's sinful reactions. There's hellish life for that wrongdoing. One has to suffer for those wrongdoings. And compassionate persons wish to see relief for those who have committed sins and will have to suffer. As so Shukadeva Goswami asks this question, hearing about the hellish planets, at the end of the fifth canto, he asks the question, how can this suffering be eliminated? The reactions to sins. So there's a very nice discussion. Shukadeva Goswami, I'm going to make it very short, he offers a Karmakanda answer, he offers a Gyanakanda answer, and then he offers a Bhakti answer. Karmakanda answer is insufficient. Atoning for sins to neutralize the reaction is insufficient. Because while it may work to neutralize sins, the tendency to commit further sin is not eradicated. So one is still bound in the material sphere. So then, coupled with atonement is knowledge. You learn to know better. Don't do this. But knowledge alone isn't enough either, because people know better and still do bad things. We do. I mean, not necessarily gross, horrible sins, but things that we know that we should do to improve our life, or should not do because it's harmful. We don't always act according to what we know. Even if we've carefully considered the subject and researched it and understand the scripture, and we still don't do it. So, devotion. And with devotion, implicit is mercy. Receiving mercy, because you can't be situated in devotion that knowledge alone is not enough about or enough to accomplish. It's receiving mercy. And when one acts in accord with that mercy which one receives in a humble, simple, and grateful mood, and acts according to that flow of mercy that one has received, that's devotion. So, the verse that I'm going to read from is Canto 6, Chapter 1, text number 15, and it's a verse that many of you have heard many times, and those of you who haven't, you'll hear it many more times. It's a very important verse in the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agham dhunvanti karsnyaya niharam iva bhaskaram. Here's Prabhupada's translation. Only a rare person who has adopted complete, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds. Uproot means not just trim, but uproot. Not just mow the lawn, but pull the weeds. Atonement is mowing the lawn. The prarabdha karma that's now fructifying is being neutralized. Like mowing the lawn. But then there's roots. After you mow the lawn, things grow. And which grows faster, the grass or the weeds?
Weeds.
So this is, the statement is, kevala bhakti, kevala, nothing but, as kevala is a strong word, absolute, like unalloyed devotional service, Prabhupada is translated here. Unalloyed devotional service. uproots the weeds of sinful actions, not just the reactions, but the root of the action itself, with no possibility that they will revive. No more. Not even tendency. I mean, free will is still there, but the misuse of free will leads to more misuse of free will. You know, bad habit leads to bad, more of the same. So we should be very careful to not compromise, or something that Prabhupada described that he saw in his disciples is they would take risks, like, you know, see how far you can go before the, go out on the limb and see before you, as you're listening carefully to see when the limb will crack. Because when the limb cracks, you fall. So don't do that. Don't, what's this phrase, push the envelope? Don't take such risks. Stay in the safety zone. Stay in the carefully guarding against offenses. And take up the path that leads to unalloyed devotion, so that even the tendency will be gone. Then the translation reads, he can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. So, tivra. It's strong. Tivra bhakti, tivrena bhakti yogena. The sun's rays are very strong. And when the strong rays of the sun directly contact the fog, it's gone. And it's not gradual, it's gone. So, the verse is spoken in terms of bhakti. But where Shukadeva Goswami is going to take this statement is specifically in terms of chanting. It applies to both abhas bhakti and namabhas. So there is such a thing as namabhas, and there is such a thing as bhakti abhas, a reflection of bhakti. And it's that an example of reflection of bhakti is like the chanting of Ajamila. He wasn't intending to call Narayan at all. He was just calling his son, whose name happened to be Narayan. I'm listening to a series of lectures where Prabhupada is discussing these verses, and he explicitly says, this was prompted by Supersoul. Supersoul saw here's this soul, Ajamila. And he was a nice Vaishnav. But he got ambushed. He got distracted. And he got lost. But he was a nice Vaishnav. From within his heart, let me inspire him to name his son Narayana. And so he named his son Narayana. And that saved him. It was unintentional. Unintentional. I'm going to read a little commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur where he explains even unintentional or even not knowing the glories of the Holy Name, see how powerful it is. And how did it work? That if, okay, if the chanting of the Holy Name is so powerful, then why did Ajamila, he kept calling his son Narayan. Why did he keep doing sinful activity? So, that's a nice question, right? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was going to answer. Keep you in suspense, I'm going to do something else for you. Because I want to share something that Prabhupada presents here about Jiva Goswami. When Jiva Goswami says that this Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya, so unalloyed devotional service, Vasudeva Parayana, it's almost like saying the same thing again. Vasudeva is Krishna. Vasudevaya, unto Krishna. Parayana, where one is completely attached. We were discussing yesterday, you know, this position of unalloyed devotion, where there's nothing else but, not even a spot, but something else. That's this parayana, Vasudeva parayana, completely attached. Because what your mind is attached to, that attachment carries you to your next destination. It carries you to the next moment and the next series of moments in your next life. What are we attached to? When we're performing our duties of life, it's not the message of pure devotion is don't be negligent in your duties of your life, sir or madam. Be negligent. Just neglect it and just do this devotional thing. No. Those duties of life should are their duties. But the attachment should not be in the act itself. The attachment should be to the object, Krishna. List a whole set of duties and whatever they are. Attachment unto Krishna. Cultivate attachment unto Krishna. That's bhakti. And that's Vasudeva Parayana. So while it's distracting, could you just like not do that right now? Thanks.
Sorry, Grandma.
So Jiva Goswami asks the question and then answers it. Does this refer to, like, you know, since we're not on that platform, we're not absolutely attached to Krishna and there's nothing else, that's not us. Does that mean, you know, we just fall off the cliff and hit the jagged rocks at the bottom? That's what's our destiny? Because we're not there? No. What Jiva Goswami says is what Shukadeva Goswami is explaining is proven by the next section is that bhakti process, even if it's in the abhas stage, it also has this potency. The potency is there. Here's what he writes. In the Padma Purana, there is a statement that Persons whose hearts are always attached to the devotional service of Lord Vishnu are immediately released from the reactions of sinful life. These reactions generally exist in four phases. I'll summarize. Prarabdha karma. It's fructifying now. It's just about to fructify. Another second. It's just beginning to sprout and then in seed. So go the other way. Seed, sprouting a seed, just about to fructify and fructifying. Those are the four stages, according to Padma Purana. And it's summarized in Nectar Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. All such reactions are immediately nullified by devotional service. When devotional service is present in one's heart, desires to perform sinful activities have no place there. Sinful life is due to ignorance, which means forgetfulness of one's constitutional position as an eternal servant of God. But when one is fully Krishna conscious, he realizes that he is God's eternal servant. Now here's Jiva Goswami explaining. In this regard, Jiva Goswami comments that bhakti may be divided into two divisions. One, santata, devotional service that continues incessantly with faith and love. Okay, now what about us? Two, kadachitki, devotional service that does not continue incessantly but is sometimes awakened. Then he goes back. Then the incessant has subdivisions. Santata has two categories. Service performed with a slight attachment. And the second is spontaneous. So we devotional service. So we like, I narrated that description of Queen Kunti when Akrura came to Hastinapur and Akrura was sent by Krishna to find out what's happening in Hastinapur. Now that the Pandavas and Kunti have come back to Hastinapur, they're likely to encounter inhospitable treatment, but I feel great protection for the Pandavas. So Akrura, go and check out the situation. And when Kunti saw Akrura and Vidura speaking, she thought of Krishna, because Akrura was residing in Dwaraka and all of her relatives were residing in Dwaraka. So she started thinking of Krishna. She asked about Krishna and her relatives, and spontaneously she just went into the state where she was talking to Krishna as if Krishna was there. That's Queen Kunti and certain very elevated devotees. Spontaneous devotional service. And the other is slight attachment. And even with slight attachment, then it's incessant. Devotional service cannot be stopped by anything and cannot be prompted to be started by anything. It's incessant, even with a slight attachment. And now for the rest of us, this kadachitki, this has three subdivisions. One, raga basamayi, devotional service in which one is almost attached. The second one is raga bhasa shunya sarupa bhuta, devotional service in which there is no spontaneous love, but one likes the constitutional position of serving. There are people we know like that. They like to serve. This, that, serve. They're happy in their constitutional position doing service. Not yet attached to Krishna, the object of loving service, a spontaneous platform, but they like to serve. Then the third category is abhas rupa. So what does abhas mean? Reflection or shadow. They're not identical, but they're similar. It can mean either. Like, you know, a reflection, you're a mirror and seeing an object in the mirror, or you're driving in your car at night and the rear view mirror, you can see the reflection of the lights of the car behind you. So it's not the car behind you, it's the mirror. But it's a reflection of the car behind you in the mirror. It's not the object, but it's the reflection of the object. So abhas bhakti is, it's not bhakti, it's a reflection of bhakti. It looks like, but the reflection is there because the object is there. So something is there, but it's not the object, it's a reflection. A slight glimpse of devotional service. Listen carefully, it's very nice. As for atonement, so now we're going down another step. Atonement, karmakanda atonement. Like you say you're sorry, you know, a religious way of making amends for some mistake. As far as atonement, if one has caught even a slight glimpse of devotional service, all needs to undergo prayaschitta or atonement are superseded. Therefore, atonement is certainly unnecessary when one has achieved spontaneous love. And above that, attachment with love, which are signs of increasing advancement in kadachit ki. Even in the stage of abhas rupa bhakti, all the reactions of sinful life are uprooted and vanquished. Srila Jiva Goswami expresses the opinion that the word karchnyena means that even if one has a desire to commit sinful actions, the roots of that desire are vanquished by abhas rupa bhakti. So you can take this, it's not, a sinful activity doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, murder, stealing, something really bad. It can mean the tendency to do anything outside of the will of Krishna. Even there may be a tendency, the power of namabhas is such it can uproot that. Tendency. It doesn't take away free will, but, you know, that kind of nudging free will in the direction of don't act in Krishna's interest, which is really what our self-interest is. Don't do that, do something else. The tendency can be eradicated even in our stage of chanting. The abhas feature of bhakti is compared to twilight. What's twilight? It's neither day nor night. It's this, the sun is setting. But it's not the full intensity of the light of the sun during daytime, nor is it darkness at night either. So it's that in-between phase. Abhas feature of bhakti is compared to twilight, and the accumulation of one's sinful activities is compared to fog. Since fog does not spread throughout the sky, the sun need do no more than merely manifest its first rays, so this is twilight in the morning, and the fog immediately disappears. Similarly, if one has even a slight relationship with devotional service, all the fog of his sinful life is immediately vanquished. But that's a glory of the holy name, and three chapters of the Bhagavatam are dedicated to explaining how that is so. Shukadeva Goswami says it's so, and I'll demonstrate how it's so by narrating the story of Ajamila's life. And here's how it happened. So it's not just in the narrating of Ajamila's life he was relieved of the reactions of his innumerable sins, but in the course of that narration we find three sections where the glories of the Holy Name are elaborated. One of those sections is where the Vishnu Dutas explain the glories of the Holy Name. The second is where Yamaraj explains the glories of the Holy Name. And the third is where Shukadeva Goswami summarizes again the glories of the Holy Name. So by reading that section, it can nurture our faith in the Holy Name. I'm going to read one of those sections. This is the Vishnu Dutta section, where they're describing, I'll just read the verses, starting with chapter 2, text 13, Vishnu Dutas speaking to the Yama Dutas. At the time of death, this Ajamila helplessly and very loudly chanted the holy name of the Lord, Narayana. That chanting alone has already freed him from the reaction of all sinful life. Therefore, O servants of Yamaraj, do not try to take him to your master for punishment in hellish conditions. So the statement was made in the purport of Prabhupada that we just read, that prayaschitta is not required if even a glimmer of the holy name or a glimmer of devotional service is present in one's life. So the Yamadutas were saying to the Vishnudutas, huh, this Ajamila, he did so many sinful things, and you know, he didn't even do any prayaschitta. Guilty. We're taking him away. And they said, step back. You're not taking him away. You're not even a fit representative of your master. Yamaraj is the Lord of Dharma. And you don't even know ABC Dharma. Here's ABC. Devotional service is so powerful. Yes, it's true. Sinful activities, unlimited sinful activities. That's, you're correct. But he chanted Narayana. Even he wasn't intending to chant Lord Narayana's name, even unintentionally, not knowing the glories of the holy name, he wasn't thinking at all like that. Let me take shelter of the holy name. He was calling his son, granted. But even that chanting is so powerful. One who chants the holy name of the Lord is immediately freed from the reactions of unlimited sins, even if he chants indirectly, which is what Ajamila was doing. Sanketyam namabhas. It's a particular kind. You just put an adjective in front of it. Unintentional. Jokingly. Or for musical entertainment. Keshavacharya. He goes to places where people chant for musical entertainment. It's not for the pleasure of Krishna. Occasionally, there's some special... Gauravani was sharing with me how excited he was when he met somebody who said they were chanting for the pleasure of Krishna. It was this chanter who was from the Balava Sampradaya. I don't know his name. Okay. He was so happy. From the sixth canto, chapter 2, Srimad Bhagavatam, even those other people, just for musical entertainment and fun or little livelihood or whatever it is, it's in this category. Or even neglectfully. This is accepted by all learned scholars of the scriptures. If one chants the holy name of Hari and then dies because of an accidental misfortune such as falling from the top of a house, okay, slipping and suffering broken bones while traveling on the road, being bitten by a serpent, being afflicted with pain and high fever, or being injured by a weapon, one is immediately absolved from having to enter hellish life, even though he is sinful. So, expanding on Krishna's explanation, svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little, alpa, even a little bit of devotional service is very powerful. Enough to rescue one from having to descend into the lower regions due to a lifetime of sinful activities. One will at least achieve a human birth in the next life. Text 16. Authorities who are learned scholars and sages have carefully ascertained that one should atone for the heaviest sins by undergoing a heavy process of atonement, and one should atone for lighter sins by undergoing lighter atonement. Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, calling the holy names of the Lord, however, vanquishes all the effects of all sinful activities, regardless of whether heavy or light. Prabhupada called this the blacksmith method. I'll share it. Said there are two methods, the goldsmith method and the blacksmith method. The goldsmith method is, the goldsmith has a little hammer, and he pulls out his little hammer and it's tap, 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 tap. He made the motion, made the sound, tap, 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 tap. And this is the way of the goldsmith method. And the blacksmith method is, you take the metal, put it in the fire, put it on the anvil, raise the big hammer, thud! One stroke, everything is finished. That is the process of devotional service. Although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows, and other such methods, these pious activities cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, he is immediately freed from all such contaminations, meaning up to the root. As a fire burns dry grass to ashes, so the holy name of the Lord, whether chanted knowingly or unknowingly, burns to ashes without fail all the reactions of one's sinful activities. One more. This is authoritative. This is the Vaikuntha Vasis. If a person, unaware of the effective potency of a certain medicine, takes that medicine, or is forced to take it, it will act, even without his knowledge, because its potency does not depend on the patient's understanding. Similarly, even though one does not know the value of chanting the holy name of the Lord, if one chants knowingly or unknowingly, the chanting will be very effective. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami, that's a fascinating commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a thriller. Mesmerizing commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. There's two volumes of explanation of Gopa Kumar, by his name, he was properly named. He was a Gopa, he's a cowherd boy, and he was very young, Gopa Kumar. He was herding cows in Vrindavan. with his other friends. And in course of time, they saw one sadhu, and they were very attracted to the sadhu. They didn't know his name. They just saw him sitting, doing his devotional practices, chanting the holy name, and sometimes crying, just sitting in a solitary place. So Gopal Kumar would, from time to time, bring him some milk. And he would go and sit and hear from him, and he became very attached to him. And over time, Gopal Kumar asked if he would give him initiation. So the sadhu agreed, said, go take your bath and come back. And he sat with his clean cloth and clean body, and he initiated him in the chanting of a mantra, Madan Gopal mantra. He didn't tell him the meaning. He didn't tell him how he should chant. Should he chant aloud? Should he chant in his mind? Didn't give him any details. Didn't say, you know, 16 rounds. He just gave him the holy name. And because Gopal Kumar had great faith in his spiritual master, whose name he didn't even know, but he understood his quality, he was very happy. And then there's the whole rest as a description of his searching for the object of his mantra, Madan Gopal, Krishna, Gopal. Because he's Gopal and he wants to meet Gopal. And gradually, only gradually does he come to understand the meaning of his mantra and even who Madan Gopal is, or how to chant. Gradually all of that becomes revealed because he has this main component of faith. Faith in his spiritual master, and therefore in turn faith in that mantra that he was given. And there's so many distractions. Let try this, try that, go here, go there. He doesn't budge an inch from the faith in wanting to experience his relationship with Madan Gopal. He even at one point says, it would be ungrateful of me if I did anything other than achieved that which my spiritual master wanted to give me, which is my relationship with Madan Gopal. I can't do anything but that. So his faith was being nurtured by his feelings of deep gratitude. And gradually, very mysteriously, most mysteriously, gradually that faith nurtured into love of God. And he went to Goloka Vrindavan in his Gopal Kumar body. It became spiritualized by the Lord's arrangement. And he entered Goloka Vrindavan. So, one more very nice passage and faith nurturing passages. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, addressing this question, why is it that if Ajamila, if Namabhas is so powerful that all sins, more sins than you can even commit of innumerable lifetimes, not just this immediate one, but or this immediate life, lifetimes. So why did he keep doing sinful activity if that was removed? Here's how what Prabhupada writes. One may argue, since Ajamila was constantly chanting the name of Narayan, how was it possible him to be associating with a prostitute and thinking of wine? Unquote. By his sinful actions, he was bringing suffering upon himself again and again. And therefore, one may say that his ultimate chanting of Narayan was the cause of his being freed. However, his chanting would then have been namaparad, like, oh, keep chanting because I'll get neutralizing. But he wasn't thinking that way. Namno balad yasahi papa buddhihi. One who continues to act sinfully and tries to neutralize his sins by chanting the holy name of the Lord is a namaparadi, an offender to the holy name. That's the question. Why didn't it work? In response, it may be said that Ajamila's chanting was inoffensive because he did not chant the name of Narayan with the purpose of counteracting his sins. He did not know that he was addicted to sinful actions. Nor did he know that his chanting of the name of Narayan was neutralizing them. He was in ignorance. Ignorance is bliss, right? Thus he did not commit a namaparad, and his repeated chanting of the holy name of Narayan while calling his son may be called pure chanting. Because of this pure chanting, Ajamila unconsciously accumulated the results of bhakti. There's a term I'm just now forgetting, where it's agyata sukriti, unknowingly performing meritorious activity. So chanting, he was calling Narayan. Prabhupada described, Narayan, please come here. Narayan, please take your meal. Narayan, let's go somewhere. Narayan, speak to me. Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. So, unknowingly, he was accumulating benefit. Indeed, even his first utterance of the holy name was sufficient to nullify all the sinful reactions of his life. To cite a logical example, a fig tree does not immediately yield fruits, but in time the fruits are available. I haven't seen a fig tree in a long time. But the example is understandable. You can say an apple tree, something we see up this climate more. I remember when, as a small boy, my father, he liked to do gardening, and one of the things he planted in the backyard was a peach tree. And I remember as a small boy looking up at the peach tree wondering, where are those peaches? I would go and ask my father, and he would smile and say, in the course of time, the next year, where are the peaches? In the course of time, and after some time. Then the peaches were really small and hard and green. You know, this is a useless peach tree. In the course of time. In the course of time, it produced very nice peaches. Similarly, Ajamila's devotional service grew little by little. And therefore, although he committed very sinful acts, the reactions did not affect him. In the Shastras, it is said that if one chants the holy name of the Lord even once, the reaction of past, present, or future sinful life do not affect him. To give another example, if one extracts the poison fangs of the serpent, this saves the serpent's future victims from poisonous effects, even if the serpent bites repeatedly. Not just the poison, but the fangs. Remove the fangs. So he's got, you know, he's toothless. So he may, it does nothing. No teeth and no poison. No harmful effect. Similarly, if a devotee chants the holy name even once, inoffensively, this protects him eternally. Let's try for it, right? Even once. He need only wait for the results of chanting to mature in due course of time. This is that's the final sentence. I'll read it again. He need only wait for the results of the chanting to mature in due course of time, like the fig tree or the peach tree. As long as it's a tree, you know, a fruit tree, or the real thing, it'll bear fruit. And the holy name, if chanted inoffensively, it will bear fruit. We may have to be patient. It's just part of life. You have to be patient. But by being patient and having that faith, if somehow we can even once, I remember as a new devotee, someone shared this with me, that Prabhupada had said to them, when you chant 16 rounds, you have 25,000 chances to chant even one name purely. And if you can chant even one name purely, that's your ticket back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Because even it may not happen immediately, it's not like, you know, all of a sudden, wow, he chanted one name purely. Oh, there goes another. Ejection button. But if we can have that faith in the holy name and with receiving mercy, nurture that faith such that with Vasudeva Parayana, with attachment, without other distractions taking our attention away, somehow if that can be achieved. So that gives impetus, doesn't it, to get rid of the other attachments so that one attachment can be there. And that's a cultivation, a gradual cultivation. But if we can achieve that this is faith. This is the definition of faith. If by achieving one thing, all other desirable things can be accomplished, just this one thing, that's what faith is by definition. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's definition. And Krishna Bhakti, Sarva Karma Krita Hoya, all other desirable things are achieved by just this one. And of all the forms of bhakti, the chanting of the holy name. Most important, most important, most important. That's my attempt to address the topic, increasing quality and quantity chanting through faith, focusing our attention on the holy name. And continuing to strive in that way. I think something that's going to stand as a visual image for me for a long time is this example of in the night when there's a light in the distance, like sailors, you know, they have a lighthouse. So although the sea may be rough, if they follow the lighthouse, the wind may blow the ship this way, may blow the ship that way, but just stay on the course of heading for the lighthouse, and you'll get there. So we were, forget what it was, couple weekends ago in the northwest part of the United States. We're right at where there's a big bay, I don't know what, just before Puget Sound, where the state of Washington and Canada are. you know, what we could see from where we were standing across the body of water was Vancouver Island, and it was this, these mountains, and it was very beautiful, kind of depending upon the light and the time of day. Looked like there's this ocean, and then there's these mountains rising out of the ocean. But I looked, so I looked at a map. It's Vancouver Island. And then they had this thing, not a nice name, but it's called the Spit. S-P-I-T. It's just a little, like, you know, 10-foot wide strip of land that goes for 5 miles, kind of curving around in an arc, making like a bay. So inside the bay was very, you know, the sea was very calm. And at the far end of the that tract of land called the Spit was a lighthouse that's been there for, you know, long time, a couple hundred years. So the devotees went for a walk. And you, at the far end, you could see, there's the lighthouse. It's 5 miles. And it was soft. Like, you know, walking on firm ground is a lot easier than walking on soft sand. And that's all there was. There wasn't like, okay, I'll take the choice of the hard. It was soft all the way. But they just kept walking and walking and walking and walking and walking. And they finally made it to the lighthouse. And you could, you know, you could do it at night. You can't even see where you're going, but there's the lighthouse. It's like you're walking on water for 5 miles. But you'll get there. So the light of these messages of the Holy Name, we may be very far from that position, but the glory of the Holy Name is there. It's throughout the scriptures, in the purports, many references from Padma Purana and Vishnu Purana and other places, our Vaishnava Acharya's writings. It's not an imagined light, it's real light, it's the truth. The holy name of Krishna is our shelter. And we just follow that light and we'll get there. It just requires some faith. And faith that's not blind or imagined, but scripturally nurtured and supported. And continue to cultivate chanting very carefully so that that goal can be reached. Reach Krishna, Krishna's eternal association. Go back to Godhead. Rejoin that relationship with Krishna that we abandoned so foolishly. Real. And one can experience the effects as one moves along that path. So our weekend together is to help nurture that effort, strengthen and fortify that effort with faith in the Holy Name. So see if there's any comments or questions on this topic.
I would like to submit. I'd like to submit a two-part question. In the analysis of the Acharyas, the commentaries that you shared with us today, implicit within that analysis is it that holy name should be received through the disciplic succession. So my part one question is, in the case of Ajamila, is that connection, the direct inspiration from the super soul?
No.
That
no.
Made him name his son?
Yes, the inspiration. Inspiration from Super Soul, Prabhupada said, caused that for naming his son, but where did that came from his previous life as a Vaishnav. And Vaishnav means he had a guru. So Krishna is We may forget Krishna, Krishna doesn't forget us. We may become ungrateful, but Krishna is forever grateful. Being grateful to that nice service he did as a young boy, Krishna inspired him. Now he could have said no, but Krishna inspired him due to that previous contact. So, having even once, and due to circumstance or misfortune, different kinds, one may neglect. But Krishna is never ungrateful. Why don't you do this? Run around.
Guru Maharaj, my second question is related to more contemporary developments that we see today's world. I see two groups of people taking interest in chanting the holy names through kirtans. One group that's being led or inspired by devotees who are representatives of disciplic succession, like Keshavacharya Prabhu or Gauravani Prabhu and so on. But then there is a whole other group which is showing interest in kirtan for various other reasons. The glories of the holy name that you described, you know, even chanting once, even without knowledge of the glories of the holy name, does it apply to even the second group, which may be chanting,
yeah,
taking up chanting for yeah, various reasons?
Yeah. I remember going for a walk outside the Juhu Temple. Some of you have been to the Juhu Temple. If you go out the front gate, make a left, just walk or drive, you go far enough and there's this kind of like a traffic circle. And right in the middle of a traffic circle is Krishna's cigarette shop or something like that. They didn't come from disciplic succession. Smoke shop or something. But it's Namabhas. It falls in that category. And does one receive benefit by, you know, saying Krishna smoke shop? Yes. Etc. That's part of the merit of being born in India, where so many businesses or people or, you know, names of children and so on are named after the Lord. Unknowingly, something somewhere in the back is, you know, some impression, and therefore that's part of the culture. There's benefit, sure.
So, Guru Maharaj, how to understand the role of purity?
How to understand the role of purity? Can you be a little more specific?
Someone leading such kirtans or chanting.
Oh, that back to the kirtan group.
Without connection to the disciplic or they don't want to connect.
Did you attend that Building Bridges conference?
No.
Okay. Listen to the recording of it. On this question was actively pursued and responded to. And the way that the respondents, particularly Gauravani, was expressing was that these are souls that are very special, that are on their way to Krishna. They may be here instead of there, but they're on a journey, and what they need is good association. So it's at some abhas stage. We don't want to leave it at the abhas stage, but that's the stage. Look at in the bigger picture of things. That's where they are.
I've also heard that someone is watering then they're watering, they may be watering the weeds also.
Yes, these people are doing that also. Along with those weeds comes behaviors that are very weed-like. I don't need to mention some of them. And, you know, that could be a detriment or injurious to the spiritual faith of those that are innocent and see, oh, here's this person that's doing this chanting and they're doing these other things. And some others may think, oh, that's what you do when you chant. You do these other things too. And so on. So it gets like, you know, really mucky, muddy. So, what's a sincere Vaishnava to do? We want to nurture their faith. You know, so some persons can just steer clear of those people because one advantage for us, a point that I wanted to make in the presentation was, we have an advantage of having Siddhanta. But then that makes us more responsible because, you know, we're not in the Ajamila situation or these other people that are, they don't know the glories of the Holy Name. They're just, you know, they like kirtan. But we know the glories of the Holy Name. So knowing the glories of the Holy Name, we must carefully guard against offenses. Otherwise it becomes an offense. It's no longer Namabhas. So we have to clean our act. That's, you know, that's where I thought you were going with this question of what about the quality of purity? Because of association of proper instruction from Srimad Bhagavatam and representatives of Vyasadeva's message, the disciplic succession message, we have a great role to play in society. We also have a great responsibility to remain strict, because it's very part of the risk. Quiz Keshavacharya later, you know, associating with these people that do all these things, if you're not on your toes, you can become contaminated by that association. But, you know, same thing for you in the workplace. You can get contaminated by that. There's a risk existing. We don't have the option of ceasing to exist. Existing in this world, it's risky. So we should be very careful in our executing our duties and the risks that are involved in doing so. But we would want to see those persons grow in their spiritual journey, in their position of faith in the holy name of Krishna. So that's what Keshavacharya and Gauravani and others are trying to do, is be faith nurturers of those people, the performers as well as the audience. And their purpose in building relationships with those persons is not just to like get more firmly rooted into the circuit, but to nurture their faith in the holy name. And at least from what I can gather, that the circuit like that, they particularly appreciate the bhakti of Prabhupada's followers. I'm the wrong person to speak on this topic. Keshavacharya is the right person to speak on this topic. Am I in the ballpark, more or less? You want to add something? Later you can. Okay. Anyone else? Wow, we got lots of hands up.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. This is also regarding Ajamila. I happened to hear some time back that Ajamila was, when he named his son, he made a conscious decision to name him as Narayana, and that was one of the reasons of his reasons why he was able to call the name of his son, even though at that point he was not really doing it with that intention. But you mentioned that Ajamila did not commit Nama Parath. He was ignorant of the sins, and also the fact that he was not even aware of the fact that he was neutralizing the effect of his sins by calling Narayan throughout his life. My question is, you mentioned that we have to be very careful about avoiding sinful acts. This even for us who are nowhere near pure devotional service, we are aware always that we are making mistakes. How is it that someone like Ajamila did not even know that he was committing sins? He was so ignorant that he was committing sins, and yet he was neutralizing the effect of it. He had some devotional service from his past life, and yet in this lifetime he was not even aware of that he was committing sins. How could that be possible?
I'll read the sentence again. It's something like a drunken man. A drunken man doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, does he really, literally not know what he's doing? Practically speaking, he doesn't know what he's doing. Ajamila's chanting was inoffensive because he did not chant the name of Narayan with the purpose of counteracting his sins. He did not know that he was addicted to sinful actions, like a drunken man. His ignorance was so thick. He wasn't thinking, this is sinful activity and I'm addicted to sinful activity, and this is, and that, thinking like that, he would feel ashamed, or, you have to correct this situation. But he wasn't thinking like that. Even going back in time, when he ran, he had savings from his marriage. He had a dowry, and he used all of that for the prostitute. And when that was gone, he brought the prostitute to live in his home with his wife and his mother. And they were, what's going on? So he left his home. Shameless. He wasn't thinking, although I'm sure he heard it, this is shameful. It was covered. That's the understanding. Is that you said like six different things, so you have to separate out the six different things.
Yeah, the first part is I heard that he made.
I never heard such a thing.
So to
comment on something I haven't read, but I heard, I'm not prepared to go there. Because then if you read it, I would like to see where you read it and the context. Because I've been hearing Prabhupada on this in the past week, like it's a whole series of lectures from all over the place on this section of the Bhagavatam. And repeatedly Prabhupada says Super Soul inspired him from within his heart. Now that doesn't mean it never came to the conscious level, but just like it slipped out of his mouth. And, all right, oh, that's a nice thing. But consciously, it can just be a cultural affectation, naming one's son, whatever is local in the culture, maybe. So. Unless we have a definitive, I don't want to comment on something that you heard and you seem to recall.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, so let's delete that one.
But he was a devotee in his previous life.
No, in his present life,
even
in his youth.
Life, yeah. And yet he became like, as you mentioned just now, that he was more like in a drunk.
Covered. He was totally covered. So covered, he didn't even know what he was doing.
So he was better off than us then.
Well, if you think that ignorance is bliss, then yes. But no. That was one of the points I specifically wanted to make. It's not that ignorance is bliss. Because in ignorance, look at all the sinful things he was doing. Better to not be in ignorance and to know and be responsible. That's better. Not a John Mule's better than us. It's better to know and to act accordingly. You know, to have proper knowledge, to chant the holy name in proper namabhas. You know, these cultivating, it's a higher level of namabhas than the Jamila's namabhas. Cultivating offenseless chanting.
And then one other thing is, so if a devotee is unconscious at the time of death, even if someone else chants the name of Krishna near that person, the Yamadutas cannot come near, right? So, does that help us in some way, even if you are not conscious?
Well, it's the soul, what the theology is from the Bhagavatam, that the soul acts, the holy name acts immediately upon the soul. So it's not like there, you know, you carry a big stick and you know you fend off the Yamadutas. But it acts on the platform of the soul. That soul who is at the moment unconscious within a body that's about to be given up, the soul is in contact with the holy name. And yes, the reactions of their sins are being removed by that soul being in the presence of the sound vibration of the holy name. And, you know, it doesn't determine that their next, it doesn't guarantee that their next life is in the spiritual world. But it does guarantee what you described. It's certainly auspicious. So we as Vaishnavas want to create an auspicious atmosphere for those who are dear to us, let's say some relative that may not be a devotee, but if we're in the presence of that relative who's not a devotee and there's chanting with the soul, they will not descend into the lower species for their sinful reactions. That's the svalpa mapya siddhanta. It's unknowingly they're engaging in devotional service, unintentionally, just by, in an unconscious state, the soul receiving the holy name. Does that run through the range of your... Okay. Now we carry over here.
First, I'd like to have a clarification on the fig tree example.
Okay.
Is the point that a sadhaka who is chanting Nam Abbas?
No, that's not the example. The example is if once there's offenseless chanting, even once, that's the fig tree. Not a sadhaka that's, Namabhas. It's Shuddhanam. My understanding is that what the reference that's being made is to Shuddhanam. The fig tree is Shuddhanam. That's my understanding of the example. So, at least following that understanding is if as sadhakas we're striving and somehow we manage to free ourselves from, so let's say offenseless is minus those 10 offenses but then let's go back to what the exactly says. Well, you may be, let's hear. Okay. Even from your... So, Ajamila did not commit a nam aparad, and his repeated chanting of the holy name of Narayan while calling his son may be called pure chanting. Because of his pure chanting, Ajamila unconsciously accumulated the results of bhakti. Indeed, even his first utterance of the holy name was sufficient to nullify all the sinful reactions of his life. To cite a logical example, a fig tree does not immediately yield fruits. So, Namavas is the fig tree, not Shuddhana. Okay, let's get back to it.
Okay, so a sadhaka who's chanting Namabhas, he's hearing that every time I chant Hare Krishna, you know, all the sinful reactions are being dissolved away. But here the example, the fig tree example, is saying it's not that now all my diseases are going to go away and my misfortunes are going to go away, but I have to be patient. It might take lifetimes, right? I might have to take birth a couple of lifetimes without sinful reactions. So I guess my question is, is one not able to enter the stage of Shuddhanam until that, you know, winding down of the reactions is finished? How does one...
Okay.
I'm just kind of confused about this whole, like, waiting for the reactions to finish thing.
Yeah, it doesn't say waiting for the reactions to finish. It's waiting for the fruits. In the example of the fig tree, or using a different metaphor, the metaphor of a bhakti lata, the fruit of the bhakti creeper is, the fruit is love of God. So it's one thing to neutralize reactions. It's not waiting for the neutralization of the reactions, but waiting for the mature fruit of love of God, which is beyond neutralizing reactions. The neutralizing of reactions is at once. The fig tree, or the bhakti lata, is the fruit of love of God. When the figs come, the love of God comes. So it may take... time for love of God to mature for the Namabhas chanter. The neutralization of sins is immediate. But?
Just one further question then. When somebody comes into the association of sadhakas who are chanting Namabhas, and, you know, they're trying to get faith in the holy name, and they're hearing that sinful reactions, etc., are dissolved immediately. How is such a person to have faith in that statement when they see that sadhakas who seem to be sincerely engaged in full-time devotional service, they're avoiding nam-aparad, they're avoiding sinful activities, yet they're still suffering from sinful reactions? They have diseases, they have, you know, whatever, so many misfortunes.
Okay. The categories of a Vaishnava having diseases or a Vaishnava having misfortune falls in a different category than sinful reaction. That's how a Vaishnava sees. So, if I saw that Donna Kelly stubbed her toe, I wouldn't think, oh, this is very nice. She's gotten some relief from some sinful reaction that she had stored. It just didn't somehow escape her chanting. I would see it as that Krishna is giving Dhanakeli a reminder, this material body is a source of misery and pain. It's not an instrument of material happiness. Krishna is giving that reminder, but in a modest, mild token way compared to whatever may have been reactions to past misdeeds. Krishna is just minimizing that, a little tap. Now, if it's something that's very extreme, you know, that's Sanatan Goswami and his weeping sores, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cured just by his embrace. But so, supposing a devotee has some very serious malady that doesn't get cured by Lord Chaitanya's embrace, is that an indication of reactions of their past sinful deeds? Or might it be Krishna providing that particular devotee with a particular type of lesson of learning how to take shelter of him in a helpless condition? Were you at the Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan? Did you hear Radhanath Maharaj's description of that devotee couple and the small daughter, and the daughter wanted a sibling to play with, and so a child was conceived, and the child that was born was autistic and several other things, and so now they now realize that Krishna is giving them an opportunity to learn selfless devotional service. Although it might look like a sinful reaction. A devotee, see, is the effect of, the action of the internal potency upon their lives in a way that's different than how the external potency is acting upon those who are not devotees. So those who are not devotees might say, rubbish. But the devotees say to that, not rubbish. That there's a difference between internal potency and external potency. Calamities come to devotees in such a way that devotees see those calamities or misfortunes in a very, very different way. And it's not just, you know, brainwashed. It's a direct act of Krishna in their life. It's Krishna directly acting in their life to help them come to him in some fashion that they require. Krishna is personally doing. Personally, in the life of devotees. So it may look or feel, you know, it hurts. There's a number of persons that want to ask questions, but I think we should move on with our schedule. Several persons want to ask questions. We'll keep our schedule. Breakfast is ready? Okay. We'll have some more time for questions. Save your questions. Maybe we'll start with questions next. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Dolineshwar Mahapad Maharaj ki
jai.